Hello, and welcome to the Grayson Taylor Podcast, the podcast for young artists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Grayson Taylor. I'm a published novelist, professional actor, composer, and independent filmmaker. This podcast is all about the creative arts, writing, filmmaking, acting, Lego building, composing, and more, including reviews of the latest films and books. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, welcome back to the Grayson Taylor Podcast. Today, we're talking about building large-scale Lego models. And the tips that you're going to hear in this episode do apply to smaller builds as well, but it's specifically for larger scale ones. So I'm going to be sharing with you tips and tricks that I've learned over the years of building, and also specifically from my latest creation, which I'm working on right now, and I started about November of 2018, and I'm still working on it. I think a little more than halfway through it, or just barely halfway through, and it's pretty large. I mean, it's 6 feet by 2.5 feet by 2 feet, so it's about 30 feet in volume, which is, thus far, the largest thing I've built. So if you want to see pictures of that and of my other LEGO creations, because it helps to have a visual, especially with this kind of thing, you can head over to my website and go to the LEGO gallery. Just go there and you'll find a lot of pictures of quite a few of my creations. I would also recommend checking out my YouTube videos on the LEGO creation that I'm working on right now, and you'll get a really close look at what it is that I'm talking about. This episode is not all about that. It's more about how you can implement the things that I have used in your own creations, but it's worth checking out, so go over there and you can get a feel for what I'm talking about or what I'm working on right now, and how I have specifically used the tricks that I'm going to be telling you about in my own building. So I'm assuming that you're a Lego builder and that you've worked with the system for a little while, at least because I'm not going to be doing super technical things like, okay, now you put piece number 579 on top of piece 1462, because that's sort of ridiculous. But I'm going to be going more into the planning and the building and the creative aspects of it. But I am assuming that you have worked with it before, and, I mean, you're gonna need to have worked with it for a little while to build something of the scale that we're talking about. So, like, what is the minimum size that I'm talking about here? Well, usually at least an area of maybe 2 square feet. I mean, it can depend, because you might have a really tall tower that has a very small base, and so it doesn't actually take up that much space in terms of, you know, ground floor, but, you know, it can still be big if it's, like, 4 feet tall, and I have built a 4 foot tall tower. It was only, one or two base plates wide at the bottom, but it was 4 feet tall, which at the time was, taller than I was. And yes, there are pictures of that on my website, so you can check that out if you want. I now have a much smaller version of that tower installed in my current LEGO world. It's definitely not 4 feet. So enough with the introductory stuff. To begin, with something this large, you should really plan it out before you start building, because otherwise you might end up with a massive mess on your hands. A massive mess of bricks, which can be pretty disastrous. So your creation might be flat, or it might have several levels. For example, the world that I'm building right now is, it has like 6 levels or something. It's, most of it's underground. So there's the surface level on top, which is a bunch of base plates, on the top. And then underneath it are a bunch of other levels built up to the top with pieces. So the first thing you do in creating, a build of this size is the sort of pre-production phase of building, which for me is just plotting out where everything is going to go, roughly, because it changes. And so I use graph paper, and if you don't have graph paper, you can probably get some. It's not that expensive, it's just paper. And so what I do is I figure out, you know, what the size of one little box, one grid on the paper is in terms of studs. And then I draw on the graph paper what I want the model to look like. It's just like an overhead view of the model And if it's multiple levels, you should use like one sheet of graph paper for each level. So, you know, it's a bit, you're basically creating a floor plan for your model. And it's not as boring as it sounds. It's a nice way to brainstorm and figure out what exactly you want to put in there to see exactly how I use these graphs and the specific graphs that I draw to design my creations. You can go to the behind-the-scenes section of the LEGO gallery, and there you'll find photographs of my graphs and pictures of me working on models and things like that. Another part of the pre-production phase of building is research, because if you're building something that is based on something in real life, for example, you might be building a minifigure scale model of a historical site or something like that, and then you should use research that, look up pictures, of course with your parents' permission, and you know, find books on it if there are books on it. Look everywhere you can for images of the thing that you're actually trying to replicate. And this happens a lot for me. I'll build something that is based on a location in a movie. For example, I've built Jurassic World about 4 times, which is a lot of times. But I think it's actually 5 times. I didn't finish it all of those 5 times, but, you know, I've started and then decided not to finish it and then restarted again later. Anyway, that is based on the park in the film Jurassic World. And thankfully we owned the film, so it was pretty easy to go and look at reference images from the film itself. I did the same thing for when I built Scarif, the planet from Rogue One. I looked at images from the film, and I have the concept art book from Rogue One, so if you have one of those for a film that, you know, that you're basing your model off of, then definitely look at that, look at any materials you have that relate to the location you're building. And once you have those images, then you can use those to help you with your graphed out plan of the model. Now, if you are building something that's based off of a real place, then you should check to see if there are measurements available. There probably are. Say you're building a minifigure scale cruise ship, which would be crazy because it would be like 10 feet long over that. Anyway, say you're building that, then you want to go and get the measurements for the ship. You know, how many feet long is it? And how many feet wide is it? How many feet tall? And once you have the specifications, it's easier to see exactly how big it needs to be in relation to your minifigures. A rule of thumb that I use is that one stud is roughly equal to 1 foot. So say there's the ship is 1,000 feet long, then it would be 1,000 studs long. That's, you know, it's very rough. There are others who will say, and that's not really a foot, but, you know, it's hard to say because LEGO minifigures, they're not exactly in the right proportions. So, you know, that's just my way of estimating it, and it's a pretty easy conversion rate. You know, 1 foot equals 1 stud. And if you're doing a scale model where it's not at minifigure scale, so you can't just say, okay, it's 1,000 feet long, so it's 1,000 studs long. Say you want to do like a 1/3 scale ship, so it's not quite minifigure scale, it's a third of that size. Then you just need to convert all the mainly the three different measurements, the length, width, and height, and then just divide those by 3, and then you'll have your right measurements for your 1/3 scale model. So yes, math can sort of help with LEGO models, but it's not too much, and it's not that complicated. Now, if what you're building is completely imaginary, it's just a world that you're making up, then instead of research, you're going to be brainstorming. So write down all your ideas for your locations and the things that are going to be inside this big world. And, you know, jot down whatever comes to you. You don't have to build all of it. So on my graph paper that I used to draw the layouts of my models, beside the drawings that I make, I will write ideas for different locations and things that I want to have in specific locations. So on the paper, I'll have the drawing of the floor plan of what it is I'm building, and next to it I'll have things I might want to add, things to add into the layout itself, things to build on top, other vehicles, buildings, whatever it is. Just jot down whatever ideas you have that you might want to put in there. Even if you are building something that is modeled after an actual place or thing, you can add your own creative flair, sort of. For example, say you're building a model of part of ancient Greece. Well, you could build minifigure versions of yourself and your family and put them in there, maybe dressed in Greek togas or something like that. Another thing you can do to help prepare for the building ahead is to figure out how many pieces roughly you're going to need for this, and if there's anything that you're going to need that you don't have, or anything that you have that you're not using that you might want to actually add in. So when you're deciding how big you want it to be, definitely factor in, you know, how many base plates you have. I work off of base plates. You could just work off of regular plates as the base, but, you know, I use the standard base plates, large ones, like the 32 by 32 base plate and the 48 by 48. There are other smaller ones that you can use, too. If you find that you don't have so many base plates as you would like to be the base of whatever it is you're building, then you can get Lego base plates. They're about $8 for a 32 by 32 base plate, and I think $14 for a 48 by 48. But that's sort of pricey, and, you know, we're kids, so I don't like to spend that kind of money. And so what you can do is, on Amazon, there and other places, there are plenty of non-Lego brand base plates that are actually just as good as Lego ones, if not better. For example, I get some base plates from Amazon that are, unlike the Lego brand base plates, they're not thin. And they do have attachments for studs on the bottom. So they're like a regular plate, but they are the size of large base plates. So to get those, just look for the link in the description of this episode. And I really like the base plates that I've linked to. And they're actually better than Lego brand base plates because they're thicker. They're the thickness of an actual plate. And they're really nice for making multiple levels of something. Because with regular Lego base plates, they do have studs on the top, but they don't have attachments for studs on the bottom, which makes it pretty much impossible to stack them and have multiple levels using those kinds of base plates. And the world that I'm building has several levels, so it is it's pretty important to have base plates that are capable of having studs attached on top and on the bottom. So enough base plate talk. One other thing I did before starting building of the Lego world that I'm working on right now is I wrote out a synopsis for the story that the world is based on. Because it is an imaginary place, it's not based on a real location, it's all fictional. And specifically, the world that I'm working on right now is sort of based around a storyline that I made up. So here's the synopsis for this world that I'm making. A cosmic event affected the invisible borders between the countless universes, momentarily opening a bridge between them. In that brief time, scientists and masterminds from various worlds came together. Deep beneath the surface of the planet, they devised a way to keep the bridge open and destroy the barriers that divided universes from one another. Aided by the powers of the Empire, Lord Voldemort, the Ice Lords, the First Order, the authorities, InGen, and Carr Morrison, their experiments deep underground were successful. The barriers were broken and worlds collided on the surface above. Now, war brews on the surface and below. Adventurers and bounty hunters venture underground and begin to form a subterranean world, striving to survive and possibly benefit from the stirring war between universes. Spurred on by their success, and with the continual aid of the villains, the scientists continue experimenting underground, creating more dangerous things by the hour. Dinosaurs bred for war, alien beasts capable of large-scale destruction, dangerous mechs, hungry monsters, lurking forces, and the next generation of warfare technology is all created within the dark underground civilization of the Shadow World. So that's the synopsis. Basically, all it means is that this Lego world is mostly underground with a surface level on top, and it's where a bunch of universes, you know, Marvel Universe, characters from my books, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Jurassic World, locations, characters, they've all collided into this one Lego world. So if the place that you're building is imaginary, then definitely come up with a storyline that it's based around. I mean, it doesn't have to be a story. It could just be a place in and of itself. But most locations do have a story to them. And it could be fun. You know, let your imagination go wild. Think of the history of this place and how it came to be, what its civilization is like, if there is a civilization within it, what all the systems set up within it are. And of course, if you're building off of a real location or a previously established fictional one, then you already have all the things set up for you, and it's just your job to build it. And because the world that I'm building has levels to it, I outlined all the things that are on those levels, mostly just, you know, in general terms. And I created a document with, you know, a list of the things that would be in these certain sections of the world, different inspirations for the feel of that area. And you can go to graysontaylor.info/lego to see that sheet and others in the behind the build section. And a word of caution, don't get caught up in the planning phase of this Lego creation, because after all, you're gonna have to build it at some point. You know, just like with writing or filmmaking, if you get stuck in the pre-production phase of it, it's never really gonna end up getting made. So, you know, you don't need too much planning for a Lego build, because it's often a very fluid thing. You know, it changes as the build goes on. But I've definitely done more planning and outlining for the Lego world that I'm working on now than I have for really any other world at all, or any other creation that I've ever done so far. Now, I think we've spent long enough talking about the pre-build part of this build, because after all, this is how to build large-scale Lego creations, not plan them. So now that you have all the measurements that you need, the references that you need, all this, the information that you're going to need to build your model, now it's time to start creating. So start with the base, obviously, which would be, if you're using base plates, lay out the base plates, the area that the whole thing is going to be built on top of. And a note as to where these base plates are being put. So I build on top of a large table. It's like just the right size for the Lego world that I'm currently working on. And in fact, I got the table specifically for that, because I did have a smaller table that I had been using, but it wasn't big enough. So I got a new table that was just the right measurements, is 6 feet by 2.5 feet. And so that's what I'm building on top of. And I used to build a lot on the floor. Like, I would build Jurassic World. I think all of my Jurassic World creations were all on the floor. But, you know, they take up considerable floor space, and it can be annoying because, you know, it's a lot easier to step on something when it's on the floor, or if you're vacuuming, it could get knocked over or something. So that's why I have a table. And it's also easier to build when it's elevated, so you don't have to be down on the floor on your knees or anything. So if you do have a table in your room, I'd say definitely use that. If there's a spare table wherever you're building this, I would recommend using a table, as long as it's the right size. And once you have all that set up, you have the base plates put down, it's time to lay the foundations for whatever it is you're building. So you might be building a pretty flat layout, like a battlefield or something, where it's just one level, and it may be over a large area, but it's just one level. You won't have to do as many foundations if you're doing something like that. However, what I'm doing with my Lego world is it has this base level, but then it has a bunch of levels above it that lead up to the surface on the top, and so it's you know, it's 2 feet tall. And so I need a lot of structure and supports at the bottom to hold up everything that's above it. You know, each level has to be able to support the level above it. There need to be, you know, obviously pieces in between these different levels to hold the next one up and fill each level with buildings and places, you know, whether that's a cave or a lake or, you know, a city, a bunch of buildings together that are holding up the surface level above it. So if you're building something like I'm building, where it's multiple levels and it's got a lot of height to it, it's not just one flat surface, or relatively flat, then you're going to need some pretty sturdy foundations, especially if it's going to be, you know, 2 feet tall like mine is. So at the beginning, it's very important to make sure that you've laid the proper groundwork so that all the levels above it will be sturdy and won't just collapse, because you need to have some pretty strong supports on the bottom level, especially, so that the next level will be able to be held up. So use plenty of bricks on the bottom level to be able to build it up to the next level, and the next, if you're building that many levels. But obviously don't use up so many bricks that you're left with nothing for the next ones. You know, you have to sort of ration your pieces so that you're using enough to support the level above it and fill the space, but also you're reserving enough to build above it. Because pretty much the worst thing that can happen when you're building a Lego creation is you run out of pieces. And some people can buy extra pieces if they run out, but I don't really like to spend very much money on Lego or on anything, really. So I just use what I have and ration it appropriately so that I have enough to build the whole thing. And this is another reason why outlining your model, plotting it out, making a graph to see how much space it's going to take up, that can help you know how many pieces it's going to take and how many you need to reserve for the future levels and the other sections of your model. So another aspect of laying the groundwork and building the foundations for your model is you may want to consider building your creation to be modular. And what this means is that it can break apart into sections. This makes it a lot easier to transport. With something as big as what I've created, or what I am creating right now, is it's very big. And even when broken up into pieces, you know, each section, each chunk is about a foot wide and a foot long and 2 feet tall. So that's still pretty big. But I did build it to be pretty much modular, which means, you know, there are several sections that can be broken apart. Like each base plate is attached to the next base plate by a Technic pin. And, you know, there are also, I use pieces just to lay over one another to secure it more, so then you just have to remove that piece if you want to break apart the sections. But building in a modular fashion is very important, especially if you're planning to move your creation. Now, moving something like what I've built would be extremely hard and somewhat dangerous, but, you know, if the need ever arises, it has been built to be modular, so it can break apart. It would be, you know, a bit complicated. But even if you're building something that is just one level, it's even easier to do it in a modular way for that, because, you know, it's smaller. Each chunk will it won't have as much height, and so it'll be a lot easier to break apart. And so all you need to do is connect each of these chunks, which is usually a base plate, and everything on top of it with a Technic pin, and just insert that into a beam or something, a Technic brick with holes on the side. And, you know, just use the same method that Lego uses in their modular buildings. It's pretty simple. The base plates are only linked by about 2 or 3 pieces. With mine, I used more pieces to link them so that, because it is bigger, it needs more pieces to make the sections fit together better. Especially because of its height. If you're just connecting it at the bottom toward the top, the pieces will begin to shift and separate, and you don't want that. So your build can develop as you continue the building process, especially if it takes place over a longer period of time or it's bigger, because, for example, my Lego world is very different from the original plan, because I'll get new ideas and I'll build new sections and expand it. It's honestly a lot better than my original plan. So be open to change. Oftentimes it can be for the better. You know, if there's a new location that you see in a film or something and you want to build it, incorporate that into your model. I've added a lot of sections just based on the latest books I've read or films I've seen and things that I just was inspired to build. And so I just, you know, incorporated that into my creation. And that's a lot easier to do with the thing that I'm doing, because it is a bunch of universes collided, and there's a whole lot of different things in the model, so I can basically put whatever I want in there. For other things, for example, if I was building a model of, you know, Scarif from Rogue One, or some planet, some actual one specific location, then, you know, you can't really add something like a new location to it. But for the thing that I'm doing, it's pretty flexible. So you're going to probably have minifigures in your model, meaning you have to figure out what minifigures are going to populate this creation. For me, for my LEGO world, I decided that it would be almost entirely named characters from films and books, and pretty much everyone else who didn't have a name, who wasn't a character from some film or book or TV show, would be done away with, and their parts would be used to make new characters. Now, most of these characters were not from sets, because a lot of the worlds that are incorporated into my creation, they don't have LEGO sets of them. And even if they did, I probably wouldn't have the funds to get them, just because I wanted to. So instead, I used all my spare minifigure parts to create a bunch of new minifigures who had names and who were characters from different things, instead of just, you know, random worker number 47. So decide what minifigures you want in your model and create them if necessary, and put them in locations to populate your creation. Also, don't be afraid to add a comedic flair to your creation. With my LEGO world, I've added lots of really funny small details, like there's a demon Abe Lincoln minifigure, there are two grandmas fighting with chainsaws on a subway platform, there's a Weird Al Yankovic singing through a megaphone, there's a snowtrooper who's being carried away in the beak of an Occamy, there's a little bunny in a crate, there's an evil robot in disguise of a grandma pushing an empty stroller, there's a Welcome to Middle-Earth billboard. All sorts of little small details that are oftentimes pretty funny, and, you know, just small little jokes that you see if you look closer. And they're sort of like treats that your audience, your viewers, and even yourself can enjoy the closer they look at the model. So in the building process, you might eventually come to a point where you've sort of run out of ideas for what to build next. Even if you do have a layout for everything that's going to be in it, there might be some empty spaces that you left and you're not sure what to put there. And especially if it's an imaginary world, you know, you might sort of run out of ideas for, like, well, what am I going to put in this space? So I would recommend looking at LEGO books and other people's LEGO creations, because that can help inspire you. A book that I would really recommend, that I really like, is a book called Beautiful LEGO 2 Dark. That's by Mike Doyle, and there's a link to that in the description. I have that book, and it's really cool. It's helpful. It has a lot of really great photos of pretty cool creations that have helped inspire parts of my LEGO world. So one thing that I've come to realize the importance of, especially in building large creations, is that you have to make sure that your build is structurally sound. Because with something as big as what I'm doing with my LEGO world, it's very big, and it has to be able to stand by itself. And, you know, if anything is off by even a stud, that could shift the whole structure in a way that is bad for its stability. And so one way to combat this and make sure that that everything is lining up correctly, especially when you have a bunch of different levels, you want them all to be lining up on top of one another in the correct way, so that they're not like a stud off or something, which could result in some problems. So one thing that you can do is to get a level, which is a tool that measures, you know, how level an object is, and before you measure the surface of your LEGO creation to see if it is straight, you should actually measure the floor first. Because, for example, my floor is not 100% straight; it's slightly slanted in both directions a little bit, and so measure that first, and then your LEGO creation, the surface should line up with the level of your floor. So if your floor is straight and on the level, and the top or the base of your model, when you put the level on it, is not 100% straight, then something may be wrong. If you're using a table, it may have to do with the table, or just the specific spot on the floor that it's at. But it's important to make sure that your structure is level, and that everything is lining up correctly the way it should be, so that it doesn't, you know, fall over when you move it to a different place. And some of the work of figuring out whether all the bricks are lining up correctly and all the levels are in line with each other. Part of that you just have to do by eye. So you just look at it and see, is this wall straight or is it bending slightly? Because one of the things about Lego bricks is that they can bend and warp some. So it's important to be sure that everything is lining up. You can use a ruler or something to figure out if you know all the structures are perfectly straight as possible, especially with something big that has a lot of supports. And it's the taller it is, the more important it is to make sure that all your structures are straight and lining up with one another, or else it can cause some problems. So enough with all that talk about the technical side of things. Another thing is detail. So you want to consider detail when you're building your creation. So I like to think of it in this way. So as if you're the viewer, you see it. The first thing that you see is you see the big picture. You see it from afar. So you see just the basic structure of the whole thing, and you can't really see details yet, but the next step is as you approach, you see more details, you know, minifigures, different vehicles and things in the build, and then the third step is like when you're right up in front of it and you can see all the tiny little details, and that's only when you're that close that they become apparent. So think about it that way. Think about what you want your viewer to see from afar, from middle distance, and from right up close. Because especially I especially like looking at things up close and seeing what little details you can put in, as I was mentioning before, like little treats for your viewers to find, and yourself to just put in little things, whether that's just like ground detailing, nicely built details in terms of building structures or trees or groundwork, like the rockiness of a cave's floor or something like that, and also minifigures and little details and hidden things that you can put in there to add a lot more character to your model. So I really like ground detailing, which is basically just layering a bunch of plates on top of one another and putting slopes and different things to create a more rugged or fleshed out ground level, as opposed to, you know, just a flat base plate. For example, if you're inside a cave, you don't expect the floor of the cave just to be completely flat, just studs all around and nothing else on top of them. So I build a lot of things on top, you know, little boulders and rises and falls in the surface of the floor, and, you know, crystals popping up, different things, little pieces here and there. And basically, I have a cave section in my Lego world, and the entire base plate that the cave is built on top of is covered in plates and pieces to make the floor of the cave a lot more rugged and bumpy and a lot more variation than just flat studs. And there can be times when just having a flat level base plate with not much on top of it in terms of ground detailing, there are times when that can be appropriate. For example, if you're building like an imperial base or something where it's not going to be rocky on the floor, it's probably going to be a very straight level floor with not much detail on it, then you could just leave empty studs there, just like the base plate. But you know, you could still add tiles on top to add some variation and grills and little detail pieces on the floor. Not too much, or it'll seem a bit messy and chaotic, especially if you're building like the floor of a, you know, an office building or something that wouldn't have a whole lot of detail in the floor itself. So, you know, there are varying levels of detail that you put in into different groundwork. For example, a forest floor would have a lot more detail in it than, say, a desert. A desert might have a lot of different mounds and hills of sand, which you would create by just layering tan-colored plates and bricks. But a forest floor would be covered with a lot of greenery pieces, bushes, flowers, even just like green plates layered on top of one another to make mounds or soil with brown plates, things like that, and tiles as well. But then again, like a road or something would be very sparse in terms of its the amount of detail put into the ground and layered on top of the base plate. And one thing that's really fun to do in terms of detailing and minifigures in your model is to create little scenes inside this larger work. So it's not just a bunch of minifigures walking around inside the model, but, you know, maybe you have a pair of minifigures having a conversation, or, you know, the minifigures are each doing something. And think about, like, what people would go where and, you know, what they would be doing. Like, will you have a miner just standing around in a cave, or would you have a miner, you know, mining? That would make a lot more sense to actually have the minifigure be doing something, maybe working with a particularly hard piece of rock or something, instead of just standing in the middle of a cave, which, you know, is sort of unrealistic, because you don't want to just have all your minifigures standing around and looking like they're just posing there to occupy the model. Another really fun thing you can do in terms of detail work and the inside workings of the model itself is to add lights. Lights can be a really cool effect that you can add to your creation. So, like, you could, if you have actual Lego brick lights, which are bricks that light up, they have batteries inside and lights, and you can just attach them to the roof of a building or something, and then when you press a button or something, it'll light up. But you can also use non-Lego lights. For example, I use just random little LED lights and things that I've collected and found and received, and I attach them to the ceilings of, you know, caves and ocean surfaces and building ceilings and things like that, and I just attach them there with Lego bricks to hold the lights into place, and then it creates a really cool effect when you turn it on. And I use color lights as well. So, like, in one cave, I have a green light to give it this creepy effect, and there are crystals all around, so it adds to that. And in this underwater segment, I have a blue light on top. It's hidden, so you can't see it, but when it's turned on, it creates this blue aura around everything that makes it look like it's really underwater. And in the back cave, I have this sort of harsh white light from the ceiling, and that adds the effect. And I have a flashing red light in the villain's base, which, you know, is pretty appropriate, and, you know, a lot of different lights like that. So think about the colors of your lights. If you are using colored lights, like LED lights that have specific colors, then, you know, match those colors to the section that you're putting them in. For example, like, I wouldn't put a red light in an underwater segment. Like, that doesn't make sense unless there is some reason for there being red light underwater. Another thing you could do is you could get, like, cheap string lights and string them along the ceilings of your model or just throughout the whole thing. And then those are really nice because they're all connected lights, and then you can just plug them in or flip a switch or whatever, and then all of them will activate at the same time. It can be a lot less of a hassle than sort of the system that I have working a bit in my Lego world, where there are just individual lights for different sections, so you have to turn them on all individually, which can be a bit annoying, but it is nice to have those different colors. So I would do a combination, maybe like use string lights for like just throughout the model in general, and then use specific colored lights for different sections. So part of this is also thinking about, like, what is your model going to look like when the lights are turned off? Because, you know, it's nice you can see it when the lights are on, but what is it going to look like if it's dark in the room? And it can create a really cool effect if you have lights, and if you have glow-in-the-dark pieces, you can place those in strategic locations to sort of light up a few small areas or draw attention to a few sections in your model. And so I have a few light up, or I have a few glow-in-the-dark pieces, and, like, I placed one on top of a tower as, like, the you know, just to show where the top of that tower is, and just all around the model to sort of provide some light to a few areas and make it not just, you know, when the lights are off, it's all just blackness and you can't see anything. No, it's cool to incorporate lights and glow-in-the-dark pieces to really give your model some life when it's dark all around. So once you've finished your model and you've put all the minifigures in, you've put in all the pieces that you want to put in, all the vehicles are in place, everything is finished, and you're satisfied with what you've built, then it's pretty much done. And you can photograph it, take a tour of it. I often make video tours of my creations, especially the larger ones. And so, you know, all you need is a camera, and then you can just take a video of the thing and edit it together and maybe put a voiceover over it using some editing software and create a tour of it that you can show to people who can't actually see the thing in person if you do want it to be seen by others. And for example, like I have a Lego gallery on my website where you can see a lot of my creations. So you could do something like that. You could, you know, post pictures of it. So this is sort of like the post-production phase of building, or post-building phase. So, you know, if you want to tell other people about it, if it's really cool, you can, you know, put some pictures up somewhere, or like I mentioned before, make a tour of it. I like to do that for the bigger models, and, you know, other Lego builders will love to see what you've created. So go ahead and share it if you want to. And you can post pictures of what you've built on my website, on the forum. And if you haven't signed up already, all you have to do is sign up, and then you can post a picture or two or three, or maybe even more if you want, of what you've built. And I would really love to see it. So I hope you enjoyed this episode on how to build a large-scale Lego creation. And I hope you found some helpful tips and tricks from this episode. And you can see how I've implemented them in my own creation at my website, which is, you can just go to graysontaylor.info/Lego. And there you'll find everything you could want to see on my Lego creations. I have a Lego gallery, and I have a special page for my Lego world. And if you want to see behind the scenes of my own Lego creations and see the graph that I've made that I was talking about earlier in this episode, you can go to Behind the Builds, where you'll see pictures of me working on incomplete models and pictures of the graphs and charts that I make to organize and plan out my creations. So I hope you've been inspired by this episode, and once more, to go to all my Lego creations and see how I work on my own projects, you can go to graysontaylor.info/Lego. And if you haven't yet, make sure to follow or subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. And please consider leaving a review. That can be on the forum of my website or on the review section of this podcast. So to all you young entrepreneurs and artists out there, stay creative and have a great week.